Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Comedy in the House podcast. The one and only Mr. Vinny Paulino. Please put your hands together, ladies and gentlemen, for your host. Here he is. It's Vinny Paulino.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy at the Carlson cast. I'm in charge of cueing the music, and there it goes. Hey, everybody. We got a big show lined up for you this morning. Kevin Pollak's coming in. Woo! Hot diggity damn. Joining me in the studio is my co-host, as always, my very good friend, and I won't say anything disparaging about him today, because I want to make him smile. It's Brian Ball.
I get a reprieve. How's that? That's good. Good morning, Vincenzo. How are you doing?
I lost a bet with Steve, so I have to be nice to you today.
That makes sense.
Hey, Steve Wrigley. How you doing back there, pal?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I got Chris here, too. Chris, take it out.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
He's running. We've got
the... We're in the bloody prison, mate. We're in the clink.
It's rough.
Stay there. Out of the studio, yeah, away from us.
Just like that entire country next to yours.
He's talking about Australia.
I made an Australian joke.
Yeah, that was really great, Brian. You see the bet I lost, folks? I'm being nice to him.
Is it too early for Australia jokes?
Shut up, Brian.
So Steve gets to be mean to me now? Is that what it is?
Steve could do as he pleases. Okay. Steve does a lot of work around here.
That's true.
You start doing work around here, then you could be like, be nice to me.
That's fair.
All right. We love you. Stop it. You're good. So we want to remind you that tonight's show, we have some great sponsors that this morning's show. I'm so this used morning. To doing the Rochester show at night. Jeez. This morning we have some great sponsors who are supporting us at Carlson Cast. Give it up for the good folks at Iron Smoke Whiskey, ladies and gentlemen. Applewood Smoked Whiskey, available in two varieties, Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey, or traditional, get you drunk whiskey. The good stuff, you know what I mean? IronSmokeWhiskey.com, drink responsibly, and if you're coming to the Comedy Club, I believe we have some signature cocktails.
Ooh. Yes, we do. I've had several of them.
I bet you have. Delicious stuff. And also, brand new sponsor to the show, holy crap, we're glad to have them, the good folks at Sapori Cafe and Catering. Yeah. I'm telling you. Good news, guys, and the monkeys in the truck. We are going to go to lunch later. It's going to be pretty good. Make sure you check out Sapori Rochester on Instagram and also on Facebook. And if you want to go get some lunch where we're going, go to the Powers Building Atrium or at the Tennis Club of Rochester or your special event. They do catering. They can take care of it. And they handle, coincidentally, all of the catering here for a comedy at the Carlson. So if you didn't know this, you could have a private party here. Just contact the club. All the information's on there. And you want to have a good show with some good food?
Good food.
Comedy at the Carlson and Sapori. It's a good team. Remember, Sapori, it's Italian for flavor.
I thought that was Flavlore.
You actually broke me for a second. That was pretty good. That's Spanish. We all know that's Spanish.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
And then last but not least, our good friends over at Three Heads Brewing. Oh, my God. Delicious beer. Oh, my God, King. Delicious beer. You can get it made right here in Rochester, New York, threeheadsbrewing.com. It's available at Wegmans, and it's also available here at Comedy at the Carlson. It's on the tap. Get yourself some of the kind. You will not regret it. And drink responsibly. So, Brian...
So
we've
Vinny.
Got some interesting things going on. This is our fifth episode of this year's show, and I am very happy. It's going pretty well so far.
I think so.
But the number one complaint that I've gotten from people is that we have not done a very good job of getting the audio podcast together.
Is that due to our hideous faces?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
People would prefer to listen to this than watch it all day long.
That makes sense. Handsome, dude.
I'll listen to him. I don't want to look at him.
A handsome slice of beef from New Zealand, mate. Just speak for yourself.
Yeah. Please. It's like a handsome hunk of goat.
It's a handsome half a rack of beef.
Whoa. Okay.
Steve's fatter than me.
Nobody's fatter than you, right?
I'm the fattest.
I'm the fattest.
We have a brand new website. We just launched it the other day. You can check it out, carlsoncast.com. You can see it on your screen right there. You can listen to all of our episodes. You can subscribe via iTunes and Google Play. And you can also watch all of our latest episodes. They're all up there. And you can generally keep track of the show if you like it.
Do you have a porn browser tab open?
Which one?
Just kidding.
Oh, you're so funny.
You were worried for a second, though. You were like, which one? Which, what side?
This is a work computer.
I mean, it was plausible.
Hey, it's freaking Friday, man. Leave me alone.
Who was that?
It's Friday morning. Who isn't looking at porn on Friday morning?
Who was that congressman last year, like, tweeted something, a screenshot, and he had, like, two porn windows open?
I don't know. You know my favorite fake news story of last year was Scott Hall, the wrestler, tweeted a picture of his Christmas tree, and there was just porn on the TV.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That made me laugh really hard. Oh, my gosh. Mark's here.
Hello.
And Kevin Pollak is here, everybody.
Hey, it's happening in here.
Come on in, my friend.
What
welcome.
What choice did I have?
Hello, none. Everyone. Not at all.
What's happening now? You want? I can't hear them. I can hear them.
You can hear them?
Yeah. You don't have to wear them if you don't want them.
Are there people that are going to call in or something that I need to hear?
No. We just give them to you for comfort. If you like them, if you don't.
It's all right. All right.
Throw them right on the ground, Chris. Yeah. Stomp them once for Mr. Pollak.
Can you set those on fire for me? Thanks very much. And then take the rest of the minute off, will you?
Yeah, pretty much, Chris. You're done for the day. Good job.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Good job.
Nice work.
You want a water or anything?
I would like a water very much. Thank you. What was your name again?
Chris.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. How you doing, Mr. Pollak? Nice to see you.
Call me Kevin, please.
Hi, Kevin. My name's Vinny. This is Brian, my co-host.
All right, nice Vinny and Brian. How are you guys?
Never been better a day in our lives. How are you today?
I don't believe you.
Well, we're full of shit.
That's all right.
Well, welcome.
I'm doing good, you know. I had a show here last night. It went fantastic. A couple more tonight and tomorrow night.
I was watching last night. It was very, very good.
Then you should really tell everyone how fantastic it was.
It was fantastic.
It's not really up to me. It doesn't sound right if I were to say it.
It could come off as disingenuous if it comes from Kevin.
Standing ovation.
Well, that's not. It's not a competition.
Well, but you won, though. The competition, so.
If it were, I won.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Thank God it wasn't. I already feel like I lost.
I didn't realize Ed Wood was a comedy album. That's fantastic. Yeah. I love that movie.
That's one of my absolute all-time favorite movies.
And nobody asked. Listen.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, it's fine.
No, I'm totally messing with you. I come to your home, I shouldn't give you shit.
Please be my guest.
Can we swear on this thing, by the way?
Be my guest.
Okay, good.
Be my guest. Swear all you like.
I just did.
Yep. So, Kevin Pollak.
Correct.
Established.
Small Jews for 400.
Who is Gilbert Gottfried?
One of the all-time greats.
There it is.
Yeah.
So, you've been doing comedy since you were 10 years old. Is that
accurate? True. I wasn't a professional until I was about 17, 18, but I started lip-syncing comedy albums at school, you know, when I was 10. And, yeah.
So you got into comedy albums. That's kind of your introduction to stand-up?
Yeah, you know, we had just invented fire. I'm old.
Uh-huh.
And in my day, there was just comedy albums. You know, there was no podcasts.
No improv.
What were the big ones you liked when you were 10?
Well, the most successful serial rapist in the history of show business, of course, Bill Cosby.
Oh, yeah. I liked that when I was a kid, too. We didn't know.
No, they didn't come on the liner notes. There was no, by the way, he's going to go on and rape 100 people.
There was no thanks to.
Yeah.
Is that how he gets introed at shows now?
Yes, I'm sure.
Serial rapist and all-around degenerate.
So him and you know, George Carlin, obviously, and Pryor and Cheech and Chong. I listened to all of them.
When you were 10, you were listening to...
Well, later.
Oh, later on?
Yeah, Cheech and Chong, probably I was in high school and thereafter.
Was it one of those things where you just, when you were listening to albums, you always knew that's what you were going to do?
You know, the first time I performed... Well, first of all, you know, I would listen to a comedy. My mom brought home the first Cosby comedy album, right? And put it in a stereo hi-fi, which was a 7-foot-wide piece of furniture.
Absolutely.
Compare that to the Nana.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I saw, I was probably 9 years old, first time I saw my parents laughing at a comedy album, but more importantly, a guy telling stories from the furniture. You know, just beaming out of this stereo hi-fi.
Right.
Right?
Right into your brains.
I'd never heard a comedian. So it was all foreign. All I knew was my parents were laughing uncontrollably, which I'd never seen before.
So you realized there was a power there.
So I was freaked out and then fascinated. So when nobody was around, I would put the comedy album on and I would listen to it. And eventually, after a couple hundred times of listening to it, I found myself standing in front of the stereo and doing what I now know is lip syncing. But back then, I'd never heard the term.
Sure.
I didn't think I'd made something up either or discovered something. I was just playing.
Right.
There was no
You played comedian.
There were no interactive games. So I was imagining what it would be like if I were the person So next thing I knew, I was lip syncing in time to the album, and my mom came home and literally caught me doing this. And said, "That's it. You're doing that at the Zucker's on Passover." Yeah, our cousin's the Zucker. So that was my first stage. Was a white painted brick fireplace.
Beautiful.
Sure.
How'd you do? How'd it go over?
Killed.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, also, if you think about it, it's his act.
Absolutely.
You know what
absolutely.
I mean? It's not going to fail. It's a little precocious Jewish kid lip syncing a famous comedian. It's kind of a you know, there's no way. No,
if a kid did that on America's Got Talent, he'd be all the way through to the finals.
Yeah, it's true, 100%. My only question is, when do you drop the phony accent?
He will never drop it. It's yeah.
No, but it's true. I never thought of it in those terms. So, after doing it at the Zucker's fireplace on Passover, and getting that reaction, it was almost instantaneous that. Even at 10, I thought, all right, well, this is it.
So, wow. who
I mean, I eventually had to drop the album and write an act.
Now, if
I
wanted to
do so, I was 16.
But. Well, if I wanted to play the Zucker's Passover party, who books it?
Yeah, I can get you in. I don't know about Passover, but certainly in the high holidays.
All right.
In September.
The high holidays. Did you hear that, Steve?
Yeah.
Sorry, we're making fun of the New Zealander in there. You started professionally at 17 or 18. That's also pretty rare. That's pretty young. Like, most people can't even get into a comedy club at that age.
Yeah, so what happened was, when I was a senior in high school, my birthday's late October, so I was always the young kid, right? I graduated still only 17. And one of the fellow students was dating a guy who had a pretty popular bar act, you know. You know, they did other people's songs, basically. But it was so popular.
And you did other people's acts, so
cover
it was perfect.
Band. Yeah. Well, by then I was 17, and I had discovered that I could do impersonations.
Sure.
So the act consisted of all impersonations. But I was talking. It wasn't an album. So, you know, it was suggested that I might be able to go on during this music act's break, when they took a break.
Right.
So I remember I think it was the first time I ever auditioned for anything. And I went to this guy's house.
Okay.
To audition my act while he sat on his couch. I remember it was like an early Mary Tyler Moore collection of furniture.
And did he have a white fireplace for you?
He did not have a white fireplace. I stood with no fireplace, which was pretty freaky.
And that's when you decided you needed a writer.
Right. Yeah. What kind of gin joint is this, sir?
Yeah, yeah. There was no fruit or vegetable tray. So that's in the writer now. So, you know, it was just performing to one person.
Right.
Maybe the worst possible audience you could face. But he laughed really hard and loved what I was doing and said, yeah, you go on during my breaks and pay me $50 or whatever it was. So I started going on between breaks and bands all over bars, all over Northern California, San Jose, where I was raised, born in San Francisco. But this was in San Jose and Los Gatos. Eventually there was one place where it was like an acoustic duo, and I would go on during their breaks.
Right.
And eventually, I'm only 19 now, maybe 20. I became slightly more popular than them locally, so they would go on during my breaks. It was how it kind of flipped.
Yeah.
And that that was a huge success, by the way.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, at the time, that was, I might as well have been on The Tonight Show. The fact that people were paying money to come see me perform, that really was the first grand slam of show.
When it comes down to it, that's quite an honor, just in general.
It's a pinnacle of success.
If somebody will give you a dollar.
In the seats. Yes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you just
meanwhile, the room held like 50 people.
50?
You know. But at the time, that could have been 5,000.
Now, do you know who the booker for that room is?
Yeah. Long gone.
Long gone.
Don't think you were born when this happened.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
That's all right. You're doing very well.
Well, thank you very much. So you started comedy. You're 18 years old. You decide, I'm going to do this professionally.
Yeah, I went to college because that was the thing you do. Right?
Sure.
So I just applied to the local state university. It was what I thought I was supposed to do.
Right.
And I graduated in 9 months. My friends called it dropping out, but I felt as though I graduated.
You learned enough.
It felt like a high school with ashtrays, quite frankly. And but I'd already been doing clubs, as I said.
Sure.
Bars. So it was easy to make the transition full time.
Yeah, you had a job already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I moved back to San Francisco when I was 21, maybe 22.
What year are we talking here?
I don't see how that's your business.
It is my business. I'm asking.
It's all on the internet, so I guess I can tell you. This would have been 1979.
All right. Just curious.
Born in 57, coming up on my 60th, late October. Very excited.
I didn't ask.
Wow.
Yeah, 60's the new 50. I'm very excited.
Well, you look good.
Yeah. Well, I feel good.
You going to do any big blowout thing for 60?
Week in Hawaii, sitting in on a beach, you know.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
I mean, not a bad way.
Six other couples are coming over. I bought a giant house. We're going to, you know.
So, yes. Was
do
the
it upright.
Yeah.
My poker game is probably going to throw me a thing.
That's what I was going to ask about the poker games.
We actually.
The infamous poker games.
Yeah, what's going on with that? You still having them? You having a good time?
Yeah, I'm having a great time. Thank you. It's one of my favorite things in life to do. I would say sex, and then being on stage, performing live, and then poker, and then eating. That would be the order of the top four.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Benny's eating is right at the top.
Yeah, eating is right up there.
We have very similar lists, but different priorities.
I understand.
And you, you don't just enjoy poker. You're like, you're legit, like, good.
I'm on the list, what do they call it, the prize money list or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
If you've cashed in a World Series of Poker event, you make this list, you know.
And you finished like
so I had a deep run in 2012 on the feature table on day 3 and day 5. On day 5, I felt it in the Granu, which actually fucked me up because he was my favorite player and still is one of my favorites. He's number one on the money list now. And you know, when you make it to day 5, first of all, there's 3 day ones.
Sure.
There's so many players, almost 7,000 players.
Yeah.
10,000 apiece. You know, I had sponsors. I'm not going to waste that kind of money on a tournament with 7,000 players.
Yeah.
But there's 3 different day ones. They can't even accommodate all the players, you know. So by day 5, I could see there was only 14 tables left. You could see all the tables.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing to go from 3 day ones with over 2,000 players each day down to 14 tables.
Right.
That you could see in the room. So when I felt in the ground, it's a great story to tell later because he's one of the best players in the world. But at the time, it messed me up because it was like beating your dad in the driveway one-on-one basketball for the first time, you know. You enjoy it, but you also feel kind of bad that you beat your dad, you know what I mean? So I felt horrible that I ended his tournament life because everyone would much rather have Negrano go on than me, you know.
Sure.
And then I had a very famous knockout of my own. It's on YouTube or whatever. Because I lost queens over queens.
Oh.
The guy four flushed, yeah.
That's not a bad...
Runner flush.
Not a bad hand.
Now, the only question I'll ask about your poker tactic is if you think that the people in the table are starting to catch your tell, that like they know you're bluffing, do you just like switch into Peter Falk just to mess them up?
No.
You don't. You just
it's
play the game.
Legitimate question, but
Falk.
No.
I would do it. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch any of my poker stuff on TV, you know, I played Vanessa Seltz heads up for $1 million a couple years ago in the Super High Rollers. I'm always cutting up at the table and doing characters and stuff. Yeah, but it's not because I need to change up my tell.
Yeah.
Now, you came into doing impersonations very early. How did you get into acting?
You know, when I started out in stand-up, I always had a little dream in the back of my head, but I hated school so much that when I got to L.A. at like 26 years old, everyone was telling me to get into an acting class, and I just didn't want to get into an acting class because I just hated school.
Right.
So what would happen was at the Improv in L.A. then, in the 1983-84, it was either the Improv or the Comedy Store.
Right.
Pick a camp, and most of the comedians that had come through San Francisco that befriended me, Seinfeld and Paul Reiser and other people like that, you know, they said, when you come to L.A., I'll set you up at the Improv, introduce you to Bud Friedman. So I started getting regular stage time, and so casting people and directors, film directors, would come to the Improv or the Comedy Store to see comedians perform, and I think they still probably do. So eventually, I just got called out to come to audition for things, and then hundreds of auditions later, I landed something. I mean, it took forever because I didn't know what I was doing.
Would you say years it took, or
it took a couple of years for sure?
Wow,
for sure, yeah.
But you were still doing stand-up, so you were comfortable. But you chased a dream while you were doing, the other.
Yeah, I remember the first woman, you know, because you got to get representation. So this woman was a manager. She said, "Come to my office. I'll have you read a scene for me, like an audition,
uh-huh.
and we'll see, you know, what we have to work with." So they're called sides when you get a few pages from a scene. They're called, so she gave me some sides. And
Do you have this woman's number? I'm just...
I'm happy to give you a lot of numbers.
Okay.
I'm just asking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry. Nobody's going to answer them.
Yeah. These people are all dead, by the way. Yeah, 100 years ago. 1983.
Do you think their kids are around? Do you think their kids got into the business?
34 years, 1983?
Jeez. I love if you just left here with a list of dead people's phone numbers.
Yeah, right.
it's the name of this episode, Dead People's Phone Numbers.
Yeah, it's not a bad title.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I read the scene for her, and she looked at me for a really long time and said, well, listen, you know, you're doing the stand-up. Acting's not for everyone. I'm sure you'll do fine as a comedian. Really.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I left there. By the way, I wasn't shocked or crushed.
Right.
Because I knew I had no training. But I was sort of inspired by those words, thinking, I'll show her, you know.
Isn't that the best
fuel, by
the
way,
though?
If you're not dead and you're out there, go fuck yourself. No, she really did. She really did inspire me with her, you know, harsh reality, gut check. Or tough love, whatever you want to call it.
Because it wasn't meant to hurt.
I was grateful as soon as I could be a little more mature, you know, that she didn't try to be encouraging to a guy who didn't know what the hell he was doing.
Right.
You know, it really did fuel me to get better. And then I would talk to other comedians. Dana Carvey and I started out in San Francisco around the same time, so... You know, he was already out in L.A., and so he was someone that I would spend time with and learn the ropes from.
Sure.
He'd already booked a couple things, so he would give me some pointers on auditioning. And, you know, they're just tricks you learn to be impressive in the room. You know?
Right.
And I've been on the other end of it now, having been a writer and a producer for many years and director now in movies. And, you know, when people come in to audition, I wrote about a chapter in my book about how the audition process is kind of designed to fail.
Sure.
And when I directed this little comedy last year called The Late Bloomer, now available on Netflix, you know, I just reached out and cast people that I wanted instead of having auditions.
Sure.
I had to audition a couple of parts, smaller parts, because they were just too small to get any of my friends to do. Right.
Right.
But, you know, I got J.K. Simmons, Maria Bello, Jane Lynch, Kumail Nanjiani, Beck Bennett from SNL.
And this is on Netflix, The Late Bloomer?
Yeah, I'm proud of about 71% of it. I had no money. I was a gun for hire.
Sure.
That's not a bad average.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
71%'s not bad.
Is there any, like, time stamp we should fast forward through while watching it that
you would
prefer?
Just bits and pieces that sit there lame. But, you know, I got Jack White to give me a song for the opening credits.
Oh, nice.
You know, I like
that.
I said,
that's probably hard to get from him, isn't it?
It's not easy enough.
No, I wouldn't
we
think so.
We met through a mutual friend, one of his managers, and so he was phenomenal to give me that song. But I really, the thing about the auditioning process that's designed to fail. So here's the difference. If you're coming into audition, you're not riddled with the confidence you would have if I just offered you the part.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right? So those are two different performances that I'm going to get. There's a chasm between those two performances. So you're coming in feeling as insecure as you're ever going to be doing this scene. Why the fuck would I want that? You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, some people are brilliant at auditioning, and then they're not so great on the set. They've just mastered the ability to audition.
They have to be hard sitting on the other side of the table, too, when you're watching these people.
Well,
can't be fun.
My heart breaks for them if they're not doing well. So I would give notes, and we would get about a half hour behind after two people because I would spend so much time with each person trying to give them a better chance of doing it.
So what are your thoughts on this interview so far?
Okay. Well, first of all, I didn't realize you were a southpaw, so that's a problem.
Okay.
I would say immediately learn how to write with your writing.
Learn to write better.
Have we told people how to get tickets for the show tonight, or do they
absolutely
already know?
It's running on the screen right now.
They already know.
You could come see Kevin Pollak
tonight. Is it in the lower third?
Hey, Steve, can you put it on the screen real quick?
He cannot because that screen is disabled for a moment.
Oh.
I'm sorry. But yeah, it's okay. Actually, there's a right on the bottom of the screen. You could call.
I believe you.
Yes.
That's fine.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
I would never lie to you.
CarlsonComedy.com.
That's it.
Fine. People can see it. I had no reference or context.
Yeah.
So I asked.
You see what you did now, Steve? You see what you did?
Really
I've been yelling at him all morning, Mark. I know he doesn't care.
He took our screen away.
What's the? There are two words I think to help you learn the Kiwi accent. Riesebleeds, is that it?
And Murray.
Murray.
Americans just shouldn't try it.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. Well, let me try my my British accent for you.
Yeah.
When I teach these guys right now how to do Jason Statham. So this is a bit from the act. I had to learn how to do Jason Statham because when my book came out a couple years ago, it's called How I Slept My Way to the Middle. Not just a funny title and technically still available.
Excellent.
When I was on the book tour doing talk shows and stuff, Jason Statham had a new movie out, so I found myself following him a lot on these talk shows.
Right.
He had a new movie out because he hadn't had a new movie out in about 7 weeks. So
you got to keep the people happy.
That's right. So invariably, when I would go on after him, the host or hostess would know that I do impersonations. So they would say, Jason Statham was just here. Do you do Jason Statham? And so I can only hear that so many times before
sure.
I start feeling like an asshole for not having a Jason
no,
Statham.
No, what do you do? You go, no, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I realized he had something about his rhythm that I could mimic. And so I taught myself to do Jason Statham. But then I started getting worried that he might not like it, right? Because I did it on the Today Show. He wasn't even a guest on
right.
that one. I just brought it up. Hey, you want to learn how to do Jason Statham? So I got nervous that I would get that phone call at 4 o'clock in the morning. Do you know who I am? Do you fucking know who I am? Well, what did I tell you, mate? I'm the bloke from up at your little fucking heart.
Well done, sir.
Do you know what I mean? Do you fucking know what I mean? So I realize he says 6 words. In fact, all Brits say these 6 words in a row faster than any human being on the planet. All
right.
The 6 words are, do you know what I mean? Which he says as, do me.
There it is.
If I put you in that chair, you'd be dead in 30 seconds. Do me. Did you say chow mein? Sound like you said chow mein. So he turns 6 words into 2 syllables, basically. You say the name Joe. The man's name Joe, and then the word mean, you know, this person's mean,
yeah.
And then you gruff up your voice a little, Joe Mean. That's it. You're done.
Joe Mean.
Yep, you're welcome.
Joe Mean.
There it is.
Now everyone can do Jason Statham. Yeah. So now, normally the Brits hate when the Yanks do their accent. I realize it's different for New Zealanders. Maybe they hate it as well. But
we don't care.
It's just embarrassing to hear you guys try.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And I don't do one, so I won't even.
I feel like you should be more embarrassed having us hear you talk.
Yeah. No, it's a great accent. And I'm sure you hear this every time someone finds out you're from New Zealand, but I love Flight of the Conchords and went and saw him live twice and became a little friendly with Jermaine, so that was cool. But I talk a lot about...
I'm pretty sure those guys are related to Steve somehow. It's not a big island. Yeah,
Jermaine's a dick. We actually kicked him out of New Zealand. No, he's too handsome. We said you've got to go.
Yeah.
Well, all the goats were loving him the best.
It's actually sheep, you ignorant twit.
You got me.
Yeah. He's not wrong. Sheep are a much better fuck.
All right.
They don't kick as much.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they're ladies.
Softer. I was just going to say softer.
Yeah, softer. Yeah.
Softer to hold on to.
That's right. A couple of Velcro gloves.
Not in the spring after they're sheared. You got to wait till midsummer, fall. So I totally stepped on your imitation of the New Zealand voice.
I don't have one.
Oh, perfect.
Yep.
Well, you have Thank the best God. Name for the... Say Kevin, Steve.
Kevin?
Kevin.
Yeah.
Weird.
There's way too many I's in that name.
Weird. So I have some questions from some viewers. Do you mind if I throw
a couple
at you?
I don't mind at all.
Here's my favorite one. This one came from our friend Chef Joe. How cool was it working with Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon, and Burgess Meredith on Grumpy Old Men?
It was ridiculously cool. I mean, honestly, you're studying at the feet of Mount Rushmore.
Absolutely.
You know? I wrote about them a lot in the book. You know, when I first started getting acting parts, I'd already had my own personal favorite character actors, and I knew that if I was going to get work at all,
sure.
I'd be a character actor. And Matthau and Lemmon, when I was growing up, were the ultimate character actors.
Absolutely.
Because they got to be movie stars.
Yeah.
You know, they were character actors. They weren't classic-looking leading men.
Right.
But they ended up both being.
Because they had something.
Huge movie stars.
Yeah.
It doesn't really happen as much anymore. Every now and then, a J.K. Simmons, for example, will get the right part.
Right.
And then he'll get some juice. And
a guy like Christoph Waltz, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. He was fifth lead on a German sitcom.
That's right.
Yeah. Right before he got Inglourious Basterds. Yeah. Fifth lead, not even the star of the show. So, as my ex-wife would say, as long as the leading man needs a best friend or an attorney, I'll continue to work. Yeah.
It's a wonderful safety net.
Yeah. So, you know, all these movies later, clearly it's true. So to work with Matthau and Lemon, to me, the ultimate character actors, was a fantasy. It was a dream come true. And they were both super approachable and gregarious, and we talked every day, all the time.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's got to be the pinnacle. I mean, that would be the pinnacle for me, just to be able to hang out with two like guys I idolized.
More so than this.
This is actually the pinnacle. Yeah. I said that could be the pinnacle.
It can't be because they're dead.
Yes. So you Which now I could do a good imitation of both of them.
You should enjoy this a little bit more, I think.
All right. Quick question.
What's possible?
Because I'm actually here.
Quick question from just your first instinct. I love that movie, Grumpy Old Men, one of my favorites. Who would really win in a fight? Walter or Jack?
Probably Matthau, just because he was much bigger.
The reach?
Yeah, he had the reach. He had the reach. Tell the tape.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just curious. Just curious.
Sure.
All right.
And he was more angry.
And he was he angry?
No.
Okay.
Just making shit up.
I could imagine Walter Matthau yelling to people.
Here's a great example, I think, of how tabloids, whether it's supermarket tabloids, or that horrible fucking show, TMZ, should all be set on fire.
Uh-huh.
So when we went to do Grumpy Old Men, we shot in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so Walter and Jack's agents wanted to get the best possible hotel suite. Turns out there was one great, great, phenomenal, giant hotel suite at this particular hotel.
And they didn't want to share it like The Odd Couple? So they didn't want to?
Don't jump ahead. So both agents are fighting over who's going to get this hotel suite. And Walter and Jack find out about it. And they say, is there a second bedroom in this hotel suite? And sure enough, it had two masters at opposite ends of this giant thing. Like it had a baby grand piano in the middle of a kitchen. It was ridiculous. So Walter and Jack said, we'll both take it. And the Odd Couple lived together while we were shooting. Now, the tabloids, their story that they broke, Matthau and Lemon fighting over hotel room.
Yeah, Jesus.
As opposed to the Odd Couple are living together. That's a way more interesting story.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a prime example of what horrible pieces of shit TMZ and these other shows.
You're not a fan. Are you a fan of the media? You like the media? No, not at all. I'm with you.
You've been caught on the TMZ?
It's a slow news day. They covered my divorce just because they have a guy down at City Hall, literally in Los Angeles. And as soon as anything becomes public record, the sale of a house or a divorce, they throw it up on that fucking horrible show. But also, I just thought, how slow of a news day you're covering my divorce? How is that news anybody gives a shit about, you know?
Well,
and also, it was just that. There was no scandalous moment in the story. It was just, and Kevin Pollak gets divorced. All right, great.
Did they just show a stock? Was it just like a quick stock picture?
No, there was no story. It was just that. It was the story.
Okay.
All right. This question comes in from our friend Will Carroll at the Rochester Teenside Outsider. Would you rather do prop comedy or piano-based novelty song comedy for the rest of your life if you had to choose?
Gun to my head, because I, of course, would choose neither.
Yeah. Right. Correct.
Sophie's Choice situation? Well, I would only take piano just because I don't play an instrument, so it means I would have to become proficient at playing piano, and that excites me.
Interesting.
At least you get something out of it.
Yep. There it is. Yep. And then I guess my last question is, are there any imitations you can't do?
Of course, there always are. And it's amazing people ask that question. I guess it makes sense, but there's no funny story that goes with it.
Sure.
There's just every now and then you'll try one and it's not in your wheelhouse.
Right.
And so you just kind of let it go.
Okay, let me refine the question for the idiot who wrote it on our page.
No, it's all right.
Here's my question.
It's a common question.
Is there anybody that you really want to do that you struggle with? Or that you like really tried and just were like, ah, screw it?
Yeah, that too happens. But again, unfortunately, there's no funny story that goes with it.
All right.
But the perhaps interesting part is, and Dana Carvey and I sort of You know, we came up at a time when Rich Little was the king. Right?
And can I say, I find it fascinating that you two hung out together.
I know, it's kind of weird because we both did impersonations and characters in our stand-up act in the late 70s, early 80s, and people told us both, you guys would be great for Saturday Night Live. And 6 months after
Turns out they were half right.
Dana got the show. Well, because he got the show. But 6 months after he got it, I got this Barry Levinson movie called Avalon. And almost overnight, I was stamped dramatic actor. This is 1989. And so our careers went like this. Very bizarre. But while he was on Saturday Night Live, because we both learned impersonations from listening to other people do it.
Right.
Somebody finds a key that opens the door. So his, you know, obviously he became famous for doing Bush and a bunch of others. And then if you Google Christopher Walken impersonation, you know, 100,000 search answers come up, and I'm number one.
Absolutely.
That doesn't mean to say, and, you know, even some, the first person I saw do it was Jay Moore.
I was
going to
say, like, I mean, the two best, and you're number one, and he's a little behind you.
Well, but he was the first one to ever do it on TV.
Sure.
And no one owns an impersonation because it's the real person.
Right.
You know, they own it. You know, like when I'm around the real person and someone says to me, do this person for them, I never want to do it because now you're just a monkey.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got the real guy standing right there.
Like when Brian tried to imitate Gilbert Gottfried in front of him poorly.
Let's not mention that.
Let's insert the clip here.
Let's not mention that again. It's
an unfortunate situation.
Oh, when, my God. My heart was hurting more so than usual.
So I was going to say that when Danny was on SNL, 1 week he had to do, I remember we were on the phone, and I said, who are you doing this week? He said, I'm doing Ross Perot. And this is a time when Ross Perot had only been on Larry King a couple of times. No one had even thought to impersonate Ross Perot. So I said, well, how are you going to do Ross Perot? He said, I don't know. They got tapes from Larry King. I'm going to watch them tonight, today and tomorrow and figure it out. So we both started sort of tinkering with a Ross Perot impression on the phone call. And by the end of the call, we both kind of nailed Ross Perot. And I realized for the first time and said to him, well, this sucks. Because Saturday, you're going to go on live television, and the whole country is going to see you do a great Ross Perot. And then if I go out and do Ross Perot, they're going to think I'm doing Dana Carvey's Ross Perot because we both kind of
And that was the last time you spoke to Dana Carvey.
No. So, again, he became famous for doing Ross Perot.
Sure.
And I would do it every now and then in my act. And again, because no one owns an impersonation, as long as I had my own take on it.
Yeah.
And for me, I remember with Ross Perot, who was the first billionaire who decided he wanted to be president. We could use him now.
Yeah, wouldn't be bad.
The thing with Ross was that he always had an analogy for everything.
Right.
So he would say, the economy is like peanut butter, see? If you feed it to a horse and it chews on it, it'll look like he's talking.
Yeah.
Got nothing to do with the economy.
Yeah. Yeah. Pardon me, sir?
Right.
Yeah. And so Dana's thing was, Larry, can I finish? Can I finish, yeah. Larry? Yeah.
Yeah. God damn, that's the best. That brings me back. Now,
when you choose an impression, I've always wondered, like, is it more often that you realize you can do the voice and then you try and make it funny, or is it like, oh, I got to do that guy because I can make that funny?
I only do them if I can make it funny.
Yeah.
You know, now because I've worked with a lot of these people, the act consists of a lot of first-hand stories of what it was like to work with Jack Nicholson.
Person, right.
Whereas before A Few Good Men, which would be 25 years in December, I don't know if I said that yet. Before A Few Good Men, I'd already been impersonating Nicholson in my stand-up back for maybe a dozen years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just doing contrived situations
with
Nicholson. And then I worked with him, and things happened. You know, like my mom visited the set. There were different things that happened that created these stories that I could then tell first-hand real stories that happened, and when it came to Nicholson's participation within the story, I'm doing the impersonation of Nicholson within the story.
It's breaking down the fourth wall.
I'm not going to give away the story, but what's Jack think of that story that you tell it on stage?
I've talked to other people like Alan Arkin and Albert Brooks, and a few, Christopher Walken certainly, have seen the impression and like it. Shatner wrote about me in his book. I don't think I talked to Jack after doing him, and we were working together. I certainly didn't bring it up. You know, I do an impersonation of you, you know. Because how many people have been in his face saying, this is what you sound like, you know. So I certainly never did it to his face.
Yeah.
And I haven't talked to him about it since, so I don't know.
It's a great story, though.
So here's my question about doing impersonations. Do you find that it is, what is more important, getting the voice accurate or the mannerisms?
Well, for me, it's both.
Right.
I don't, although with De Niro, I just do the face. I don't even speak.
Neither right. does he, really.
In the act. You know, it's more like this. A little bit.
That's pretty eerie. That's pretty good. You just
I heard things.
You stop just, it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
You just need
me out, man.
Sorcerer.
Insult them a little bit. A little bit. Like a lot of breathing through the nose. But it's all, it, for me, when I do them, it's like a possession.
Right.
You know, it becomes a head-to-toe embodiment of the person. And so it becomes an acting exercise, I guess. And I attribute whatever ability I have to be an actor, I do attribute to the fact that I started with impressions first.
Sure.
Because I was learning those people's mannerisms and their cadence and their ability to be believable in a scene.
There's a lot of lessons.
Yeah. I learned more from doing that.
Wow.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well, it's a really interesting approach to the whole art of stand-up in general. It's
maybe I should teach an acting class where you learn how to act by doing other people.
I'm sure you would learn bad tricks.
You know, like Pacino, at one point just started yelling.
Right.
You know? So if you wanted to learn how to act, you would have to have roles that only call for yelling.
Sure. Sure. So it's
and then you would apply what you learned that I could teach you how to act by the way Pacino acts. And then when I see these actors now, I just see tricks.
You know?
Like when I see Pacino in a movie now, not even the yelling. They're just certain things that he does that everybody knows. This is Al Pacino. At some point, Al Pacino became an old black blues player.
Certainly did.
Because this is what he sounds like. Right? I don't know what happened. Right?
But and he here used to sound is. So different.
Yeah. I don't know. Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. And the hand, the mannerisms, man. Right. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Now I have to go rest my voice because I have two shows tonight.
You have two shows tonight. Can I ask you one final
Otherwise,
question?
Otherwise, I'll sound like Al Pacino the whole show.
Can I ask you one final question and we'll let you run out of here? Because I know you've been wanting to get out of here for probably, I don't know, before you got here.
17 minutes.
Yeah, roughly. My question is, you're a great actor. You're a great
comedian.
You want
me to critique your interviewing skills again? Because you're very good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
He is very good.
I'm trying.
He calls me afterwards. He goes, I was terrible. I'm not good. I don't know. And I have to go, Vinny, you're pretty.
It's better to be insecure about it than too confident.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no confidence here.
Good.
No confidence here. What would you... in your personal preference, rather be known as a great actor or a great comedian, if people had to pick one?
That is the best question you've asked.
Thank you.
And it's not one that I think
it's my closer.
I've been asked before, so it's pretty pretty phenomenal that after all these years I have not been asked a question. To be known for. Yeah, I'm a comedian first in my heart. First and foremost, I'm a comedian. It's how I started. I feel most comfortable on stage performing stand-up comedy.
Right.
To this day, all these movies later, I feel a little bit like a poser when I'm acting. Sometimes, I'm only good the first couple takes. After that, I just hear myself acting. And my whole goal is to never be caught acting. You know, when I was in...
Which should be any good actor's goal.
Yeah. When I was on A Few Good Men, again, J.T. Walsh, one of the all-time great character actors... He played Markinson, Nicholson's sidekick.
Who killed himself.
So I confessed to him in his trailer one day, just shooting the shit. I said, look, I started as a stand-up comedian. I had no formal training. This is my eighth movie, but it's the first really huge one. And I think this is the one I'm going to get found out that I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And he said, you know, you're already doing a technique that people go to school to learn, which is called less is more.
Right.
You're already underplaying and doing less is more, which is is really the way to go. He said there's a second part to that. Less is more, nothing is best. If you can do nothing in a scene and be interesting and compelling to watch, then you win. So I like to think I've made a career now out of doing nothing. So it's difficult for me because there's some work that I'm actually proud of. Not a lot of it, but there's a little that I'm actually proud of. So I think it's difficult to choose between the two, because I've certainly made way more headway as an actor than I did as a comedian. It's sort of the irony of my stand-up career. When my second HBO stand-up special came out, which in 1992, stand-up specials
right.
were really tough to get.
Right, because they were fewer and far between.
There's a new one on every week on Netflix now. Right. It's a little obnoxious. I'm happy for people who are getting breaks, but it just doesn't mean as much to me. In my day, it was really fucking hard to get a special, you know? Really, really hard. So my second 1 hour, my first 1 hour was my second special. And it was a huge big deal. It came out around the same time as A Few Good Men.
Right.
And I'd already been doing stand-up for 15 years easily at that point. So A Few Good Men was this juggernaut success, thankfully. And it shit on 15 years of stand-up comedy in terms of my own career. Because however people discover you is how they know you.
Correct.
Yeah. So I'm in this giant movie, and I was the only actor. I was like, where's Waldo in that cast? I was the only actor that the audience didn't know.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And therefore discovered. And it was a huge leap for me. I went from auditioning to getting offers like that one movie. So all that hard work as a stand-up comedian was overshadowed, is what I really mean to say.
Right. Overnight, yeah.
Within weeks.
Sure.
And I never stopped. I mean, I did take almost 10 years off because I started focusing on the movies in the 90s. When you're getting offers, it was easy to shift my focus. And also, in 1992, 93 was the death of stand-up comedy. The comedy boom,
the comedy bubble
of
burst.
The mid-80s to late 80s really died around 92, 93. And so that made it that much easier to drift away, you know. When I started in the late 70s, there was about 25 clubs in the country.
Right.
By the comedy boom mid-80s, there were 300 comedy clubs in the country. And by 93, they had all died away.
It was back to 25.
Yeah. And they were back to probably like 50 to 75.
Right.
So although I took a long time off, I came back to touring maybe in 2000, 2001, and I've never really laid off since. I don't do as many dates. I'll probably book, I don't know, maybe 12, 15 dates a year, and then I'll end up probably having postponing half of them because a movie or a thing comes up.
Sure.
But it's still my first love and my favorite thing. So gun to my head, I got to go stand up, even though it's nearly impossible.
Acting's pretty sweet.
I mean, people ask me what I prefer to do, and the answer is I prefer not to choose.
Sure.
That's what
I mean.
It's still a fantasy. It's still a childhood fantasy that I'm in a movie. I mean, I can't believe it.
That's amazing. You've been incredibly gracious with your time. Folks, if you're watching this right now, get your tickets to come see Kevin Pollak tonight or tomorrow night. There's four shows, carlsoncomedy.com. Follow the info on the scroll down there. And, Kevin Pollak, amazing. Thank you for
coming. My pleasure.
Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure.
Before we go, I want to remind you, this episode was brought to you by the good folks at Iron Smoke Whiskey, ironsmokewhiskey.com. Drink responsibly. Sapori Cafe and Catering, we're coming your way, Chef Joe. Powers Building, Tennis Club of Rochester, or your special events. Sapori Rochester, Facebook, Instagram, and Three Heads Brewing. Come get a cold beer right here at Carlson Comedy. Thank you. Good night. We'll see you all next time.
You said goodnight at 11:45.
Thank you for pointing that out. My other show's at night. I'm sorry.
No problem.
I'm a mess.
Really, really.
He doesn't know where.